Well, I suppose the story of one of the three brothers involved in this particular group, Eric Wilson, would have been well known within the press to a certain degree, in that he turned up in 2010 in Spain having shot a man outside a bar. He was a pretty notorious figure, but less well known were the other brothers and the cousins and the nephew within the five members of this hit team. So in 2017, two members of the group, Alan Wilson, who was a cousin of the three brothers, and their nephew Luke, both of them were jailed for the attempted murder, sorry, the conspiracy to murder of a man named Gary Hutch, Gary Hanley, on behalf of the Kinnan cartel. So after that, we kind of began to look into the story of them, and what we found was quite bizarre. I mean, the levels to which they were prepared to go and to engage in just for money, and the disregard for human life was just incredible.
And it is all about money, isn't it?
It is about money, and it's also about drugs. I mean, drug abuse ran through the whole thing. I mean, they started out, it's kind of interesting in that a lot of people we spoke to said that these guys were pretty regular guys when they were younger. They were involved in a bit of petty crime, but it seems that they got sucked into more and more serious activity as they went along. And this was because they were becoming more and more addicted to cocaine. The most notorious member of the five, Eric, he started out drug dealing. He carried out his first murder as a result of a dispute over drugs, a stash that had gone missing with his best friend. He shot that guy and then went into a spiral where he began taking more and more cocaine. And by the time he turned up a year later in Drogheda in 2006 and carried out two more murders, he was apparently demanding a kilo of cocaine, which is worth up to €70,000 when it's broken down on the streets, as his hit fee. And he was taking most of this cocaine himself. It was for his personal use rather than being sold on. So that's the level to which drug abuse and addiction sort of propelled them forward into this paid murder scheme.
So more than just cash, a kilo of cocaine was his payment. The fact that they were hooked on drugs, so they went out there presumably high and just didn't care who they shot, as once they fed their own habit. That's the gist of it.
Well, there was certainly, I mean, for example, they would work with one particular organization and carry out a murder for them, and then they would turn around and work for the same organization whose member they had killed previously. There was no discrimination here. It was all about who would pay them and who would supply the drugs for their habit and for them to sell on as well. And this kind of became a sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, because a lot of assassins, a lot of hitmen would use cocaine to sort of steady their nerve before they carry it out. They needed the drugs to carry out these hits, and they needed the hits to gain the cocaine to carry them out. So it became a sort of a circle like that. But I mean, it really was only ever going to end one way, and it did for all of them in terms of, for example, for Eric, when he shot a man outside a bar in front of several witnesses, it was because the police in Spain believe he was high on cocaine. When the two members, when Alan Wilson and Luke Wilson were caught involved in this Kinnan hit plot in 2017, the Gardaí were listening to their every move. The cars bugged, and they could hear Luke Wilson, who was only, I think, in his early 20s at that point, getting into a car at 6 a.m. and immediately snorting lines of cocaine off a dashboard. Well, that's the level of the addiction that was there.
And do we have an idea on how many people in all suffered at these guys' hands? How many people were killed by them?
Well, at a best guess, I mean, it's between 12 and 15. It's depending on which murders are attributed to them by various police forces. Eric would have accounted for at least 9 of these. He was the most prolific. He was only convicted for one. His brother Keith, who again was apparently quite a nice young man and quite gentlemanly as a young fellow, he was convicted for one and is believed to have carried out another. And the other two have no convictions for murder per se, so I suppose we can't attribute one to them legally speaking. Mm-hmm. But they all offered their services for hire. The man that was shot dead, the only one of them to be actually killed himself, John Wilson, he is believed by Gardaí to have been involved in an incident in 2010 outside a pub in Dublin where he ran forward and shot several customers outside a bar because he was trying to kill somebody inside but panicked and just opened fire on whoever was outside. So, you know, there was no discrimination on who they might kill or who they might go after. It was just about the money and the drugs.
Were they aligned with a particular group, or was there no discrimination there either, that they worked for the money and for the drugs, or were they aligned with a particular organisation?
Yeah, I suppose this is what made them pretty much unique. I mean, a lot of people who get involved in this kind of behaviour tend to be addicts, but not as sort of in control of their own situation as the Wilsons would have been. The Wilsons were a tight unit. The three brothers were always tight from Ballyfermot together. Their cousin, Alan Wilson, from the city centre, and of course the nephew, Luke, who would have grown up with the three brothers. So they were a family unit, and they kind of relied on each other's reputation to protect themselves. Now, for example, when Eric was was jailed in Spain for this murder outside a bar, Gardaí received intelligence that other gangsters wanted to kill him in case he might spill the beans on what he'd been hired to do. But what prevented them from moving against him and trying to have him murdered in prison was the fear that the other brothers and cousin might come after them if they did so. So they relied on that to sort of protect themselves. But of course, once one by one they were either murdered or went off to prison, that sort of strength that they relied on fell apart. And they really are kind of isolated at this stage, and the world has moved on in criminal terms, so they would be sort of yesterday's men in many ways.
I suppose in many areas of the criminal underworld, there's always somebody who will step up and fill the shoes of somebody who is jailed or killed. Presumably there are still other paid hitmen, paid assassins out there.
There would be, of course,
yeah.
And I mean, a lot of them have been caught and jailed as a result of the Gardaí investigating what's been going on in Dublin, the Kinahan-Hutch feud. As I say, what made the Wilsons kind of unique was that they were a family unit who sort of willingly dedicated themselves to this, as opposed to the majority of people who are pressurised into this to relieve drug debts. They made this choice. They decided to go into it. And, you know, what has come after, certainly Gardaí haven't come across anything like that in terms of the ruthlessness shown that the Wilsons engaged in. There was one example, for example, in Drogheda, the second murder that Eric Wilson carried out up there. He had been contracted to shoot one man, and a neighbour who was also a drug dealer saw him do this. Now, this neighbour, a man named Roy Coddington, was being pressurised, extorted by the INRA at the time. So he approached Eric Wilson and said to him, "Look, I saw you shoot this other fella, but I'm not going to go to the guards. I just want you to sell me a weapon so I can protect myself from these extortionists." And Eric Wilson said, "Yes, I'll do that."
Yeah.
And when he agreed to meet him to sell him this weapon, he actually shot him just in case the man might expose him. So that's the level of ruthlessness that they were engaged in.
Now, in terms of, and I know you've co-written this along with Stephen Breen, your colleague in the Irish Sun, this is presumably years and years of research and hard work and getting all the information together.
Well, it's gathering the information, cross-checking. A lot of it is in the public domain in terms of court reports, but it's digging into that and seeing what other information is available on them. And talking to those who would have known them growing up as well, because that wouldn't have come out in the court reports. So yes, there was a lot of research in it. It's kind of difficult, I suppose, to do a biography of criminal figures at times, but we got as much information together as we could, and it's all in the book, yes.
People will be curious about your own personal safety doing something like this. You are reporting a lot of what, as you say, was in the public domain, but you've dug a small bit deeper. Is there, you're obviously concerned and you're very careful yourselves when you're researching such a controversial book.
Well, I suppose common sense would dictate that you take basic precautions. I mean, but you have to put this against the context of, you know, there are Gardaí up and down the country who go out and face, you know, daily threats in relation to their work, and they just go out and get on with the job. You know, I wouldn't say I'm the bravest person in the world, but, you know, if you allow yourself to be cowed by these individuals, you know, nothing would ever be done. So I wouldn't place myself in the same category as members of the Gardaí who face down these guys on a daily basis. You just have to do what you have to do in this regard, and if you shy away from reporting on the depth and breadth of their activities, nothing would ever really be published about them, unfortunately.
It's obviously a story that needs to be told as well, because many people probably wouldn't have realised the connection between these guys and that they actually are almost a family unit. And, you know, the public needs to know these stories as well.
Well, I mean, this is it. There possibly is still a perception within Ireland of, you know, that most of our criminals are of the ordinary, decent type. A lot of that, I suppose, has been dispelled by the activities of the Kinahan cartel over the past 4 or 5 years. But it's kind of important as well to show what ordinary police are facing in this country when they go out and deal with these guys. For example, one of them threatened a journalist over his reporting of his activities. He also issued death threats against a senior detective. And, you know, they wouldn't hesitate to use all of this kind of intimidation available to them. And as I say, it's ordinary Gardaí who are the front line between these people and you know, regular members of society. And they have to deal with this kind of intimidation on a daily basis. So it's no harm to shine a light on what these guys get up to so that people appreciate what the challenges that Gardaí face in doing their job.
Different parts of the country, of course, will earn a reputation at certain times for being a gangland capital or a drugs capital, or whatever it might be. Dublin, of course, has changed over the past 15, 20, 25 years or thereabouts. We always had the ERU, but now we have armed support units. But still, the frontline guards, we're still an unarmed police force, technically.
Yeah, and this is something that most ordinary Gardaí seem to differ on within, depending on where they're based. I remember seeing surveys there a couple of years ago where, you know, within the GRA, I think it was, where urban Gardaí sort of favoured becoming armed, whereas rural Gardaí wanted to keep things the way they were. So it's something, I suppose, which is really a matter for Gardaí themselves. At the moment, you have the armed support units, the EOU, who will come in and engage where they're required. It's a bit of a half and half situation. It would be a pity, really, if we went the way of other European countries and every Garda was armed. But it may well come to that. I suppose it's a case of wait and see.
Or at least tasers or other maybe non-lethal weapons to help frontline Gardaí tackle crime. I meant to ask you earlier, for those in this particular gang who weren't looking for drugs as payment and they were getting cash, what kind of money were they getting for hits, do we know?
It's hard to judge because there doesn't seem to be a set rate for a murder. It depends on the target and who is paying, really. But there was some interesting audio picked up by the Gardaí who were listening into that 2017 operation, which eventually saw Alan Wilson and his cousin Luke Wilson go to jail. They had the cars they were using bugged for 3 months, and they were picking up Alan Wilson talking about a fee of $100,000 to murder this particular target, Gary Hanley. And they were talking about if they had to bring a third. He was discussing this with his getaway driver, and they were saying they would split it 50-50. And they were talking about how if they needed a third person to come on board, maybe they could cut him in for 20,000 and then split 40,000 each. So that was the level of it. I mean, Eric Wilson, as I've said, the kilo of cocaine he would have been receiving would have a wholesale value of €30,000. So the loss to his paymaster might be €30,000, whereas if he wanted to sell it onwards, he might gain €70,000 in total. Unfortunately, he was taking most of it himself, so it's hard to know what he would have gained if he did sell it on at all. But yeah, the money was there. If they were engaging in high-profile murders, the money was there, and it was quite considerable.
Is it fair to say so that with the different Garda units that have been set up in recent years and over the past 20 or 30 years, you know, CAB and so forth and the Economic Crime Bureau, are the guards better equipped, do you believe, to deal with gangland crime in this country?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the operation, for example, where they eventually prevented this hit, and this was something replicated throughout the Kinahan-Hutch feud, Gardaí intervened in up to, I think, 50 planned murders and prevented them all. And the particular one that's detailed in the book, they were in it. They were in on it from the very beginning. They had intelligence that four vehicles were going to be used as part of it. They went in and they bugged these vehicles. They gained access and they were listening to the gang every step of the way. So they were monitoring it, but of course there was a sort of a situation where they had to wait to catch the gang red-handed. They had to wait for the moment in which they were on their way with a murder weapon to carry this out so that they can ensure they would send these guys away for the maximum amount of time possible. And that operation really worked to a T. They made all the right calls. You know, nobody was injured. Five members of a serious criminal gang sent away for long prison sentences. So the policing in Ireland is of an international standard. I mean, you have guys who know what they're doing. They're trained in surveillance. They're trained in how to bring these guys down. So they have learned a lot. I mean, it's an unfortunate way to learn, but they have learned a lot from what has gone on in Dublin during the Kinahan-Hutch feud, and they're really applying this kind of education to how they police the country.